extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Ow, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental Tire from Kansas City. I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, David Goss, Matt Doyle, and it feels so good to say it for the second time in the year 2021, Kalen Carr. What's up, boys? How's it going? How you feeling? How you doing? Two wins for the U.S. in World Cup qualifying. Still protect your hearts, but it feels good. It feels nice. I've really been enjoying the spaces that you've been doing. Got a big show today coming. Season previews roll on. We got the Fire, Red Bulls, Galaxy, and Minnesota United. We're going to talk number nines, specifically the top five in MLS, according to Kalen Carr. But spaces, technology is just launching us off into the future. And here I am. I get to like give my kid a bath while I listen to Doyle and Dave basically do their best Mike Francesa impressions. It's amazing.
It was Mike and the Mad Dog. I'm clearly Mike. And
hey, Cammy! Hey, Cammy Doyle! You're crazy! You're crazy!
And David is clearly the Mad Dog. It's fun. We've been doing Twitter Spaces, which is Twitter's version of Clubhouse, essentially, before and after all of these games. And just follow me on Twitter, follow Gasman on Twitter, or the Extra Time account will retweet it. It's been great. And like for Gasman and I, because we grew up in and around New York, we were like just advocates of we were raised on drive time sports talk radio. So we're living the dream every single time we fire.
Dude, I thought you were a Berkeley guy. What the heck's going on here? You got a pick.
I lived in Berkeley for 7 years and it just felt like a really long vacation. And okay. I miss it. I really do.
I got to be honest. I'm back in New York now, but yeah, I had a nice little winter break. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was good.
Doyle's ability to code switch between different parts of the country that he identifies with is truly elite. Just boom. Depending on the audience, he might be from Boston. He might be from Connecticut. He might be just New York TID. Boy. He might be a Berkeley guy. He might be Riviera Maya, like, straight up on the beach in Mexico. It doesn't matter.
That's my favorite, Doyle.
I just realized I'm definitely going to be doing Twitter Spaces from the resort down in Riviera Maya as I suck down multiple Palomas.
Oh my God.
That is
which quality. Is a pretty Mike Francesa move. He normally probably does Florida, but it's the same thing.
Twitter Spaces
umbrella liquor special.
More like a clear liquor special. That's the good stuff. Look, we're going to do that today as well. I don't know. You won't know it because this comes out at 5 p.m., but I think we're going to start trying to do the overflow of the mailbag because we always have, and Dave, you know this, like you put together this whole beautiful mailbag rundown of all these incredible thoughts from our listeners, 401-206-0MLS, extratimeandmlssoccer.com if you don't know, and then we don't get to enough of it, and it's a lot of good content, so we're just going to give it a try. After these shows, go check us out on Spaces, probably like noon, 1 p.m. Eastern time-ish on Mondays and Thursdays. We'll retweet it. We'll send it out. We'll have fun with it. We'll see if it sticks. And if it doesn't.
We are never done with this show by noon Eastern time. Are you kidding me?
That's not true, Doyle. Sometimes Weeby misses the show.
And then we're done. Yeah, we're in and out 45 minutes. Boom.
Okay. Now that we've got logistics talk in, it is time to get this thing going. If you have not checked that MLSsoccer.com yet this morning, you should do so. Charlie Boehm has your complete coverage of the US U23s. Sam Jones, who if you don't subscribe to The Kickoff, absolutely rectify that right now. It is a hilarious daily email from Sam straight out of the nether regions of his brain. But he has your guide to the ultimate people's players of 2021. What are the ultimate people's players of 2021? They are just El Seño. Just start with El Seño and extrapolate from there. And plus, real soccer is now being played, which is nice. It is March 22nd, and on April 16th, we will have real soccer.
Yeah, I was going to say, did we consider preseason soccer to be real soccer?
Not the realist, it's somewhere on that spectrum, but it's being played. They're playing games.
That's true.
They're wearing their jerseys, and the coverage is MLSsoccer.com. Before we get to our producer honors reminder of the day, though, Ezequiel Barco scored a brace. So that does bring us to whether it is real soccer. And Atlanta United look like they'll sign Alan Franco. There was some rumors might not happen.
Listen, I appreciate every person for their fandom, but I could not imagine being a Atlanta United fan over the last 3 months and hoping for a center back. It has been, for me, an up and down experience. Every time Felipe Cardenas tweets, It's like deal is off, deal's back on, deal is off, new player, deal is off, deal's back on. It's a lot to deal with.
Yeah. Turns out that Brazilian team was just like leveraging you. Or no, it wasn't their team. It was the agent. Or was it the player? Will he actually come? Is it 50% of the transfer or is it 80? Like we just don't know. But Alan Franco is in Atlanta. But Felipe says there are more details that we don't know. So, I mean, just don't. I mean, I guess give him a physical. Right? Like TBD. Yeah. That didn't work out that well. Doyle, what do you think about this whole back and forth? I mean, there's two sides of this for Atlanta United. One is a lot of stuff seemingly hasn't worked out. Two, we talk about MLS teams all the time having holes they need to be filled, and we just keep talking about the hole, and we never talk about it being filled. It seems like they will fill the hole, which is, I mean, you got to be happy about that if you're an Atlanta United supporter.
I mean, he has the profile of a guy who should work, but he's a very good center back in the Argentine Superliga. He is a guy who's on the fringes of the Argentine national team program. That's a good profile, but as we saw with Nico Figal in Miami last year, it's not a guarantee. And I said it a million times already this offseason. I'm going to say it again. More than anything else, this season in Atlanta is going to be a referendum on how good Gabriel Heinze is. If Gabriel Heinze is as good a coach as he seems to be, as his track record says, and as basically everybody in Argentina says, then this signing is probably going to work out because Alan Franco is going to be put in a situation where he can succeed. So I would be pretty excited buy it if I was an Atlanta fan, but you don't know until you see it on the field.
No, you don't.
The other thing, and I think we've talked about this a little bit, is with COVID-19, you can't travel, you can't go meet people, you're not at the same amount of games. So for Atlanta United, the best thing they can do, and it's not their fault, there's just the reality, is to sign guys that Heinze is already comfortable with. And so that's why they're looking at this pool of players from Argentina mainly, and they haven't really gone to Paraguay or Colombia or where we've seen other teams go, Ecuador, for center backs, I think is because you've got a new coach with a new group and all the restrictions. You want someone that you already believe in, and that's what Atlanta's trying to get.
So almost congratulations. I won't say congratulations, Five Stripes fans, because it ain't done yet, and I'm not believing it till it's done. Heinze is trying to become a champion for the first time in his history as a head coach. Guess who is a champion? It's our producing honors reminder of the day. Congrats to EMLS Cup champion Diddy Chris Lido, NYCFC, repping. He's got the treble, EMLS Series 1 and 2, and now EMLS Cup. He moves on to play a little regional competition. He is basically the god right now. He knocked off the Red Bulls side. Adamu was the representative on that side. New York is certainly blue in this case. Big, how do I put this? Not an emotional guy in high pressure moments.
That's his job.
Would that intimidate you more than if there was a guy who every time he scored on you was staring you down, getting in your face, celebrating like wild, as opposed to someone who just, he drops a goal, drops another goal, and he just swigs from his water bottle. Maybe he gives you a little side eye, but that's it.
And it's like the old school water bottle. It's the one that has, like, you know, the nozzle that if you spray, like the old Gatorade bottles.
So, Libby, I'm asking you.
Yes.
Would that intimidate you more?
It would. And if I was NYCFC, I might use this to my advantage. I might bring Diddy Chris Lido in before the playoffs, have him talk to the squad.
That's true.
As someone who can succeed in high pressure moments and in, you know, in championship moments, maybe
not
he
a
has
lot
something
of that in
to,
the locker room.
No, he has something to pass on. He's got something to pass on.
You see managers do this too. I think Mourinho did that. They scored and he just sits there frozen and you try and psych out the opponent that way. I don't know. Maybe he's taking a page. I don't know.
We will see, but congratulations to Diddy Chris Lido. I think he's got a future here in this FIFA video game. All right, let's get to it. Quick qualifying recap because you guys are doing it on Spaces. U.S. national team, the youth national team, the U23s, Jason Kreis's boys, two wins. Of course, they kind of snuck one out over Costa Rica, 1-0, and then handled their business against the Dominican Republic in the second half, got a 4-0 win. So now they have better goal differential, I believe they did, than Mexico. They're +1 on Mexico, is that right now?
No, I think Mexico, because
Mexico blew out Costa Rica.
Smashed Costa Rica.
Oh, I went to sleep before the smashing.
I guaranteed
concluded.
Costa Rica would win on Twitter Spaces multiple times, and Costa Rica got smoked by Mexico.
Yeah, David Goss is 0-1 on guarantees in 2021. Really,
but I'll take it because it meant the U.S. clinched. So now Mexico and the U.S. have already clinched. For
this
the semifinals.
It's a dead rubber, this match. It actually doesn't matter for anything except bragging rights and then who you face in the next round. And I don't think that's hugely important, given that from what I saw, Canada and Honduras are roughly same level. Would you agree with that, David?
Yeah, I would say so. And we talked about this a bit, but for Canada, same as the U.S., most players from MLS or CPL. So they're in preseason. So while the group's pretty talented, they haven't performed that well in Honduras. This is not the strongest group, although they are bringing a few more players. All the teams basically have been getting players as this tournament has gone along. They could improve, but these two teams should not be as strong as what Costa Rica was and what Mexico is. So for the U.S. and Mexico right now, you've already clinched. All you need to do is win your semifinal and you qualify. You don't have to win the final. So that's the one game that matters. And I don't think that it matters enough. You also won't know because Canada and Honduras play each other for their last game after the U.S. versus Mexico. So there's not that much to play for left in that one. And then the semifinals, everything.
Yeah, that's everything. Should Jason Kreis, how should he approach Mexico? Because the game doesn't matter. It's bragging rights, and I don't think bragging rights matter at all in this case. If you beat Mexico and then you lose for whatever reason, whether it's maybe yellow cards or it's fatigue or whatever, injury that occurs, I don't know what the scenario is, but I don't want to talk about it. I'm knocking on my desk right now. All that matters is the semifinal. Get to the friggin' Olympics, man. Should they just approach it as if it's just like a step on the road to that moment?
Yes. And that means don't play guys who are carrying yellow cards. That would be Jesus Ferreira, Justin Glad. There's one more carrying a yellow. Is Sasani carrying a yellow? I don't think so. But there's one more player carrying a yellow. Like, don't risk losing them. Manage minutes. So that means Ewell, Vines, maybe Jonathan Lewis sits for this one for, other than like the last half hour. It sucks because if you're a U.S. coach and you're a U.S. player, you don't want to go into any match against Mexico at anything less than 100%. But for the good of the overall project, which is qualifying for the Olympics, this game does not matter. It just doesn't matter. The entire thing rests on that semifinal game.
Who's impressed you guys? Kaylin, I see you dropping into those spaces. We're giving Twitter a lot of free advertising right now. What do you guys think? Who's impressed you? Hassani had the two goals. They were beautiful.
Yeah, Hassani, I think Ferreira plays a really important role for the team. So I agree with the idea. He picked up kind of a soft yellow card in the last match. And so maybe you rest him in this one and you give Soto a chance from the beginning. He gets a goal. He gets a start. You know, hopefully he gets going a little bit too. I could see Benji Michel coming in on that right wing for Lewis, giving him a bit of a rest. And Michel has been, I think, really good change of pace off the bench. The question is with Saucedo, is he better from the start? I really like that he was one of the few players that was really willing to go at guys in that first half. In the last match, they just seemed a little bit methodical. He's one guy that's not afraid to run at guys or try and take a little bit of a risk. But he also could be really dangerous coming off the bench. So I think Ferreira is really important in the way that they want to play, with that dropping back, getting in possession, and then being able to facilitate into the wings. So I liked all those guys. But yeah, Dotson's an interesting one too. I think he was the clear standout of them. We've seen him play a bunch of different positions over his MLS career for Minnesota United, whether it's at right back at times, he can play in the middle of midfield. He could even be a winger at times. You see a couple times he gets faced up and can actually get to the end line and get a cross off. And then the technique around the goal has really impressed me. I mean, it's a tight space. He works well. It's two really good strikes, good first touch, can blow by guys. And he even played the ball through, I believe, to Michel. First time ball, sends Michel in behind on the last goal as well to Mihailovic. So I'd like to see. I thought he looked good in the first game. I thought he looked great in the last one. And I think a guy that I think can really give this team some energy. And at times it seemed like they just didn't really have maybe someone to turn over the ball in the right spot or create pressure, or then also add a little bit of, I guess, more energy or athleticism to the midfield. And then the quality around the goal and the confidence right now, especially for a team that hasn't been in form, that hasn't been playing regular season games or even preseason matches yet, you kind of got to go with the guys like him that are in form already and ride that hot hand.
By the way, there are some changes for the senior national team as well, but we'll see how they do against Mexico. It is interesting, though, in the Hassani Dotson case and Ferreira, too, for I think Jason Kreis is to come out and say in a couple of ways that we don't agree with the way that they're used or best used at the club level. We think actually maybe Hassani Dotson is better in a more advanced position. We think Ferreira is this nine that we don't see him as much with FC Dallas.
If Ferreira is a nine, he has to make near post runs, and he doesn't. And he didn't, like, it actually led to the goal in the first game. But if you go back and you watch that replay, he and Hassani Dotson are standing next to each other, like 40 yards from goal, as the ball gets swung out to Sam Vines. And, like, that is the moment where you have to make a near post run. And it's actually Hassani who makes the near post run that scrambles the defense. And Ferreira is just able to stand at the top of the box and poach a goal, which is great. But I was left after that first game thinking, like, if Hassani doesn't make that near post run, is Jesus going to make the near post run? Well, then we had a moment in the first half last night against the DR where they took a quick restart. And it was a clear moment where a real center forward would beat his defender to the near post and at least put pressure on the defense. And there Jesus was just sort of like hanging out at the top of the box again. So I thought the team performed better with Sebastian Soto on because he's just an actual nine.
Get more of that on Spaces, folks. All right, let's get to our season previews. Should we start with Minnesota United since we just got up the Sonny Dotson talk and he's going to be a big part of this? I mean, you know, that could have, I whiffed on that transition, didn't I? Well, let's just, let's do it. We were going to go with the Fire, but Minnesota, you get the honors now. And we start with your haiku. I struggled here. I struggled so much. And I know Wesper Dine is just going to roast me. I felt that the Loons had a fan base that would feel very strongly about the quality of this prose. So here's Minnesota United. Bobello the God, looking for doubters. A number nine, MLS.com. That's where the rumors are. That's where the doubters are. That was not my best work. Don't give me that face, Dave. I'm so sorry.
I appreciate it because Rodrigo Sanchez Chavarria, who's a legend, who came at me on Twitter and said that he liked you more, is, I think, a poet, a professor of poetry. So now you're off and I'm back on top. So
we don't know that. We don't know what his tastes are. Let me know. All right. What do we think about this season for Minnesota United? What is 2021 for the Loons? Doyle, what do you think?
It's still TBD because they have a couple of holes, the big one being center forward, but they showed last year that they're willing to go out and spend, and that obviously over the past couple of years, their signings have been much more targeted and much more effective. Given how good Bobello was, given how good the entire team was in the postseason, given what they've brought back, and given how it seems they're going to try to use that DP number nine, like, this is a top three team in the West. This is a team that is a legitimate threat to win any competition that they're in. I don't think they're, you know, A-tier favorites with the likes of Columbus, LAFC, maybe full-strength Portland. But they're, you know, if Ike gets healthy and then they make the type of number nine signing that we think, they could be at that tier.
All right, speaking of Ike Opara, I had this further down because it was basically moot in 2020, and I think it's probably going to be moot in 2021 as much as that pains me. Sylvan Bell in Minnesota. What's the deal with Ike Opara, he says, as a Minnesota United supporter? I feel as if he's holding out for some reason. No, Sylvan, no. Get that thought straight out of your head. If he's hurt in any way, why wouldn't he just say so, and why is it undisclosed? Well, Sylvan, because that's a personal reason. And I can do whatever the hell he wants with it. Does he want to be paid more? No. He got a new contract. Traded? No. I don't see how this benefits anybody. Well, that's true. But, you know, look, people have physical issues. People have injuries. It doesn't always have to be that those things are out in the open. And that seems to be what is the case right now. The Ike Opara is having some personal issues with his body. And he doesn't want to share it with the world. So until we get more news, that's where we are. And Ike Opara is not going to be, in my mind right now, somebody you look at with Minnesota United and say he's going to be on the field. So the nice thing is that they proved last year that they can be okay without Ike. And that didn't seem to be the case in 2019. In 2019, yeah, it felt like everybody was on Ike's back and he was sort of dragging them into respectability. Well, they got there and now they seem to be staying there. So that's a good thing. Let's go to how about their key signings here. Yeah, Callum Montgomery over from FC Dallas. Young center back. We'll see what they can make with him. Will Trapp comes over from Inter Miami. Probably a backup if I'm thinking about. Same from Inter Miami. Juan Agudelo currently not a backup. And then they got Patrick Weah as a homegrown. The big one now, though, as far as signings goes, what you said, Doyle, it's center forward. Ramon Avila from Boca Juniors. He's 31 years old. He's got a pretty good goal scoring record across many years.
He's a starting center forward for Boca Juniors.
Is he right now because of injuries? Yeah. I thought he was like way down the depth chart.
He hasn't played all year.
I thought he was the starter.
No.
I think he's played. The way I have it down is he's played 9 times since 2019.
Yeah. Okay. He scored a goal in a couple in the Libertadores final against River. He scored a goal and was big in that moment for that particular team in like 17, 18, 19. But right now he's down the depth chart. Reports are that Boca have said no because it was a loan proposition, etc. Maybe this is just the beginning of the negotiation period for Minnesota United. We're going to do your nines later, Kaylin. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to ask this. You guys keep talking about Minnesota needs a number nine. They made the Western Conference final starting Robin Lode there, and we've seen Lode struggle at left midfield. Is he not a starter on this team? How does all of that fit together?
So first of all, let me just correct. During the Copa Diego Maradona back in January, he was Boca Juniors' starting center forward. So, and he scored 4 goals in 4 games.
Okay.
So
that's probably why Boca's saying, I don't think so. Alone isn't going to do it for us. He is 31 years old, though. Kaylin, back to you. I'm guessing that Minnesota
When I look at Goss's comment, I thought it was actually a good one, because for as much as Adrian Heath, everyone thinks that he wants a certain type of number nine, he's cycled through maybe 4 or 5 of them that have fit the profile but haven't really panned out on the pitch. And so maybe that's not what they need. And I think when we look at how they did in the playoffs last year, it's a great point, Goss, that they just looked so much more dynamic with Lud playing there, dropping off, getting him behind. He could move, they were more dangerous on the wings. And then with Reynoso drawing a lot of attention, that really opened things up. So, you know, hot boy, Kevin Molino's gone. I think that's the piece where that's okay. Killer. Yeah, we have Reynoso, but you kind of also needed that X factor of somebody that could maybe beat you on the dribble or do something unexpected. And that's what Molino did. But they look dynamic even without a number nine. So, and we look around also the way, you know, a lot of teams are beginning to play, or the national team, at least, to some degree seems like it right now, on the U23s. And then even with the first team, I could see that being something that they explore. Also, when you look at the price tag of what it costs to bring in a big time number nine from a Boca Juniors, is that really what they need, as opposed to really upgrading maybe more at the wing position and finding a replacement for Molino, and then Lud does the job, and then you have some depth coming off the bench for a different look if you want it?
The reason we can talk about it like that is because of Reynoso, right? Like, without Reynoso, this conversation is basically moot. So that's our star spotlight. It has to be Babello. Mm-hmm. What did he show us last year, Dave? What did you see from him? And do you expect that level of, you know, the assist numbers were off the charts. He got goals in the playoffs. He basically did everything the game ran through him. Is it sustainable? Do you think that is going to be an every week in Major League Soccer regular season full grind Reynoso? Or was that like into Minnesota, Jack to be there, big moments, big games, has Molino next to him and off and running?
No, I think it's sustainable. First of all, a lot of what he did early was without Molino, because Molino was in and out of the lineup. And this is a guy that's entering his prime. So this isn't an idea where, oh, like Darwin Quintero showed up, played well, but you're talking about a guy entering into his 30s. This is who they went out and got. And I think you looked at a guy who always wants the ball, can range from side to side to come pick it up, doesn't always have to play the final pass, is happy to drop a little deeper and set guys up for the right angles to play into the box or to play down the channels to create opportunities. And then when he is the one that plays that ball, it's perfection. It's curling the right way to get it into your get into your stride to shoot. It's balls dropped over the top with the perfect chip, the perfect backspin. He's an elite chance creator. I think he will continue to be this year. And that's why all the other little pieces with Minnesota are okay. Because, yeah, they survived last year without Ike. But we don't know that Michael Boxall or DeBassi can keep up that performance this year. We don't know, as Kaylin said, how they're going to replace Kevin Molino's production. Do they get a number nine? Where does Robin Lode play? And yet Reynoso is a top number 10 in this league and will create opportunities game in and game out to give them opportunities to compete.
What makes him different from some of the other ones we see? Like, I think we get it. We're going to do dump number 10s on Thursday. But, like, as we watch him, as we try to compare him, as we try to, you know, explain why it is that Minnesota United, without this sort of position that is lionized in this game, a goal scorer, can be a top three team in the East. Because when you said that, Doyle, I guess I still have some doubts as to whether they will be that team over the course of a whole year. But maybe I'm still just that MLS.com doubter. You know what I mean? Maybe I just haven't got my wrapped my brain around this new era of the Loons and Adrian Heath's team.
Yeah, I mean, every year is going to be a test of this team's ability to adapt, right? And we doubted going into 2019, even though they had signed Ozzy and Ike, and that really worked out well. We doubted going into 2020 once Ike got hurt, and that ended up going really well. There are reasons to doubt now, but I think that there are more reasons to be confident. And the thing that Bebello does as well as anybody in the league is he connects the entire team. The ball is the thing that connects the entire team. And if you are on the field with Bebello and you make a run, he is going to find you. And that puts the opposing defense under a ton of pressure at like literally every moment. And he's very good at that. He's not as multidimensional as a guy like Ladero. He's not as goal dangerous as a guy like Zelarayan. But he's like a throwback, almost Valderrama style, classic South American number 10, in that he just pulls all the strings, and that made everybody in that attack better.
And with how physical and athletic MLS is, this is a rare position. There are not a ton of leagues in the world that have classic number 10s. If we've talked about it on this show before, so he's in the perfect opportunity. And we asked what makes him better, what makes him different. He's just really good at all the things he does. And he's now in a position, this league fits him, where he can be that 10 because he's got two guys behind him who will cover ground, two center backs that will stay home. And so he's a top player because he just does everything, or he does what Doyle talked about, all those things really well. And he's in a position where that's all he's being asked of. Yep. Ladero does more things well, but it's also part of his responsibility in Seattle. Minnesota's built differently to allow him to be himself.
All right, let's keep it rolling here. Gregory asks, who starts for Minnesota in goal, Miller or St. Clair? I think
Dane St. Clair.
Thought that one was pretty simple. We answered that. 2,222 player to watch with this team. Gets a little tough. Tomas Chacon, Patrick Weah, maybe, but probably not. I mean, the Chaconistas generally have been quite disappointed in the playing time and the run that their boy has gotten, and Patrick Weah doesn't seem like he's going to waltz right into this team. So I'll throw it a different way. You guys talked about this, again, another shameless plug on Spaces, but Kalen, how do you get Hassani Dotson into this team? Can you? I mean, would it be a situation where could you push Reynoso out and let him free roam, and maybe Ludd plays that, he plays that like false nine role, and you still have Finley, and then maybe it's like Jan Gregus and Hassani in front of Ozzy, and I don't know. I'm trying to figure out a way to get him on there. It doesn't seem that obvious.
Yeah, it's tricky. I don't think that Ozzy's probably going to play, 30 matches this year. I think they're going to need to rest him at times. So I think you could even see Hassani playing in a more deep-lying position with Gregush, sort of as like dual sixes, or you could see him move forward even a little bit more. I've liked what I've seen, especially when you see him being goal dangerous, to get him in more advanced positions where, could he at times play on a wing position even and really sort of get a little bit more advanced in the attack? We talked about, I don't know if he's going to go full hot boy on us, but I do think that he's definitely shown he's got some stuff that you'd like to see closer to goal as well. I think the one thing you don't want to mess around with is Reynoso's position. I really think we've seen it work in the position that it is. In order to fit one player in the field, you don't, sort of break the car to fix another piece or whatever the thing is. You just leave him where he's at. And that's the good thing about Dotson, is that he can play so many different positions. And I do expect him, even though you would think as a player, you want to get that one position, lock it down, nail it down. But I do think that his versatility actually will be a strength for the national team. And I think Heath can make that argument to him to say, you've been used in a lot of different positions, even with the national team program. So being able to show that versatility might give you more opportunities to break into the first team, which I'm sure is a goal of his after this. So I think we still may see him in quite a number of spots.
That's interesting. The wing role I hadn't thought about, but seeing what we're seeing here and maybe the way they might play a little bit narrow, maybe you let him be on the outside with somebody overlapping, like a Metnair, whatever it might be, could be good. Now, we've given Minnesota like 14 minutes, so don't come complaining to us.
We have a flyover country bias since Weeby moved to Kansas. Like, we just
is Minnesota even show. Flyover? Where are you we're flying? Giving, Saskatchewan?
We're giving teams in the middle of the continent more love than coastal teams. Who cares about the coast?
Exactly. Exactly. Now, look, this is fine. The weakness, I mean, it's Reynoso, something happens. He's not on the field. It's the center back pairing doesn't work at all. And we're back to sort of previous levels of Minnesota United. I think it probably revolves around Reynoso, and we don't want to discuss those things because we like nice things. So how about our predictions? I'll let you start, Dave. We'll go around the horn. What do you think, Minnesota United?
I'm in agreement with what Doyle said at the beginning. I have them as a top three team in the Western Conference. The other thing, which we haven't talked about, but you sort of mentioned in their additions, they've just gotten deeper. They've basically gone out and gotten MLS veterans at every position to keep them competitive throughout the year, and Reynoso is not a national team guy. So you'd expect, outside of Jan Gregus, most of their big pieces will be there all season, and I think they'll be able to compete week to week at the top of the West.
Cosign.
Top three feels like a lot
of weakness. Does it really? I don't. I think Seattle's dropped off a bit. I think when you look at LAFC, I think will be better, but weren't up to their standard last year. Kansas City still some question marks. They were top last year. Will they be top three, top four last year?
I'm old enough to remember how Kansas City's season ended last year and who ended it.
So I think they're right up there.
Here's my logic. I think they're up there too. My logic is the LAFC and Portland are better. I think will be better in the regular season. So then if you're talking top three, then it has to be Minnesota United that pushes into that spot. And they will basically, to me, be in that pool of Kansas City, the Sounders, maybe like another up-and-coming team like Dallas or the Rapids can put in. But you have like a three- or four-team group there, and it's going to depend on fitness, it's going to depend on health, and it's going to depend on what Minnesota United does and how they sort of figure out this hole at nine. Whether it's okay because Robin Lloyd goes there and he's more productive than he ever has been, whether it's okay because you have like a hot boy redux of somebody else coming in, or Reynoso is just that good. I just get a little bit nervous when it's like everything revolves around Bebello. And what if something happens to him? Whereas I'm not sure the other teams, other than maybe like an Alan Pulido, have quite as much of a reliance as Minnesota United does. Anyway, we got to move on. Anders is yelling at us.
17-minute long, 10-minute extra time segment.
Exactly. Now we'll keep it a little bit quicker, maybe, because who knows what the Chicago Fire are. Keep it in the Midwest.
No, you guys, we'll trim it out of the Galaxy. We'll do classic. We'll take it from the Galaxy and give to Minnesota. God, MLS again, The big brother.
Here's your Fire haiku. On the precipice of what? New badge, new results, or more Keystone Cops? This is a team that had a lot of really nice moments last year that if you watch them regularly, you could kind of get caught up and say they're playing good soccer. But then if you looked at the results, they only won 5 games and they consistently dropped the anvil on their foot, like in the most ridiculous and silly ways. So for me, for this team this year, it's to have those good moments not be completely undone by the 1, 2, 3 moments of madness that just seem to consistently crop up with the Chicago Fire. It seems to me like their roster is good enough to compete for a playoff spot and be sort of in the middle tier of the Eastern Conference. I don't think that they're a top tier team in the East. It seems to me like Rafael Wicky has good ideas and has managed to communicate a lot of those good ideas to his players, and it should be better in the second season of trying to do so. It seems to me like all of that might not matter if they play back passes horizontally across their 18 in moments of, the most important moments and get scored on and lose because of it. So to me, this team has a lot of potential. This team could be something really good, but it's basically been a decade of the same old from the Fire. And that's why you see them switching out of badges and everything else. I feel like they've sort of forgotten their history. They're trying to go back to it. Well, maybe they can go back to getting results too. That would be nice.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anybody want to pick that up?
Yeah, I'll say this.
Was that all the haiku? I was just checking.
No. We do the haiku, and then, I've decided I'm a Fire fan this year. So that was basically like me laying back on the therapist couch and being like, I made this decision. I decided that the Fire were going to be a team that I sort of threw my emotional energy behind. And it could either really work out for me, or it could be what Fire fans know all too well.
And let's say this for the Chicago, they were an expansion team last year, a new coaching staff, a new front office. I think they brought in 12 new players. It was the most in MLS outside of the actual expansion teams. So everything you can talk about with them can just be improvement from year one to year two. It can be more fluid. Their passing can be crisper. Their patterns can be crisper. The mental mistakes, part of that could be a lack of familiarity between the players. And then you have individual upgrades from just performances from players. The big one for them would be Ignacio Aliceta. He was a young DP. They brought him in. They really got nothing from him last year. By the end of the year, they were starting him. And so the hope is, and I give every player who's new to MLS from overseas at least 2 years to prove themselves, that he's able to do that for them this year. My big question mark for the course of the season is if Gaston Jimenez is gone for a while with Copa America. He is the tempo setter. He's the star in the middle, and I don't know that they can survive without him, but for best 11 and depth, I think they can compete for sure for a playoff spot in the East.
Ignacio Aliceta, he's our 2222 spotlight here. What did we see or not see last year from him?
What we saw was head down dribbling and a bit of pace, and what we did not see was any sort of end product. Just didn't seem to have the timing or awareness of how the pieces were moving on the field to be actually dangerous in the final third. And he's going to have to be that this year, because not only is it just because he's a DP and like, okay, it's year two. And as David said, you want to give young players 2 years to adjust to MLS, especially during quarantine times, but they traded Georgi Mihailovic, and Georgi Mihailovic is not the best player in the world, but he was really, really useful for this team as an inverted playmaking left winger. All Georgi was asked to do last year was play the final pass and create chances, and he was really good at it. Aliceta has not shown that, but I think that's the spot he's going to be used in. And if he struggles, then this Fire team that, as you said, Weeby, can play really pretty soccer. If Aliceta struggles, they'll play pretty soccer until the final third, at which point it will become ineffective soccer.
Robert Berridge still found a way last year to have a good harvest, despite the fact that it was some question marks there. Here's their key signings, a couple young forwards, attacking players in here. John Yedder Duran is not going to be with this team this year, I believe. It's going to be when he turns 18, but they went and pulled that trigger early.
2022 season.
Yeah. So it seems like a good signing, has a big reputation. Chinoso Afor comes in. Stanislav Ivanov comes in. I personally can't tell you much about those guys other than probably they're not going to be expected to contribute massively in 2021. John Espinoza comes in, I believe, at right back for this team. And, of course, you got Johnny Bornstein at left back. They have been playing Johan Kappelhoff in midfield this year. And maybe, Dave, that goes to what you were saying about Jimenez. Maybe that's a, like, we know you're going to be gone. Let's use preseason to try to get maybe some solutions in place long term for that, because they don't seem to have a ton of depth at D-mid. Here's a good question in the mailbag from Timothy Hatza. Last season, the Fire were stats darlings. Great expected goals, decent expected goals allowed, but standings duds. Again, 5 wins. Rafa Wicki said he likes his roster as is. Is it realistic to expect a lot more from this team than we saw last year? Timothy says he's got the Malort on ice already. Kaylin, you got a special relationship with this club. Is it reasonable to expect a lot more when there hasn't been that much turnover?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that they're, you know, you look at a lot of the changes that they made, and that takes time to set in. And, you know, even when I look at some of their more consistent players last year, it was Mauricio Pineda, you know, like being a rookie. And so I just think the idea that they've dropped so many points late in games with mistakes that were mostly mental mistakes, like lacking, you know, decision-making, tracking runners, discipline, things like that. And I think if you can get around those types of mistakes are compounding, actually, because you lose confidence and then it just one begets the next and it begets the next. And you sort of start to say, OK, well, what's the other Chicago team, the Cubs back in the day, where it's like, here we go again. It's all going to kind of fall apart. And I think, you know, for a team, for a stop start season where you're constantly having to get back up and down again and you just constantly make these mistakes, that does a lot to affect the team's psyche. So I think with a fresh start, a little more experience for these players that have come in the past, I would expect them to, you know, they were still so close to the playoffs in the last year and really just sort of crumbled at the end. And so I think if you just get on the right side of, you know, half of those results where you just eliminate terrible mistakes, even then it's a playoff team last year. So I think this team, if they do grow, if they do take that next step forward, there is a path forward for them in the playoffs.
Is this like, I just keep thinking of the, is this the yips? Did they have the yips?
I mean, it was something like that, right? It was something where it was, I mean, it was so reliable that I remember Kalen and I doing preview shows the last couple of weekends of the year. And like, it was like right before the Fire games. And we were like, well, here's what's going to happen. The Fire are going to play well. And then there's going to be some sort of disaster at the back and they're going to lose because of it. And it happened like two or three games in a row. And we were able to predict it because it had happened so frequently before that. And at some point, like, yeah, it's just mental. It's the yips. And as Kalen said, it compounds. Like it happens once and everybody's heads drop a little bit. And then it happens the next time. And then it happens the time after that. And then suddenly that's who you are as a team.
Star spotlight here as we move away from Chuck Knobloch throwing to first base. Robert Berich. Dave, what'd you see from him? What'd you like?
A true legitimate number nine. I know we got Kalen's list coming up in a little bit. I think he's in the conversation for sure. He, spoiler, was on my top five for number nine. Can link up play really well. Has the right ideas of back to goal, how to find runners coming off him, good feet. And then makes the right runs in the box and is a confident finisher. You talk about, you know, confidence and it growing on itself. He scored early in the season and he just continued to roll from there. And he is a good enough number nine to carry this team for a decent spell. You know, him and Gaston Jimenez, I think, are the two stars. And both of them are arguably top five at their position in MLS in two of the most important spots in the league. And that's why they can compete for a playoff spot. So you look at Berich, they got everything they wanted from him. We talked about a lot last preseason, Chicharito rumors, all this stuff. I think they nailed it with that signing, and he's an idea of the type of player that they want going forward.
And you imagine if there's both Frankowski and Alaceda on each wing looking for him, knowing where he wants the ball. There were moments last year I remember watching this team, and Berich is sitting in the box like looking at somebody and just like shrugging his shoulders and be like, I'm right here. Just put it on my foot. Like, I will do the, we'll just put it on my foot. I'll score the goal. That this is fine. Biggest weakness, we've talked about it. It's the yips. It's the mental errors. It's the moments that take all the good moments away in a split second. If they can get those right, they can move forward. It seems like Rafael Wicki is an exceedingly positive guy. So if there's anybody who maybe can address that mental side with these guys, you'd think it'd probably be Wicki. How about the 2021 prediction for this team? I have them as a playoff team, I believe. I don't have them like hosting a playoff game, but I think that they will be safely a playoff team sort of in the mid back of that pack, probably not playing for their lives on decision day presented by AT&T.
I think they will be in the mix. I'm not yet ready. I need to see a couple more weeks of preseason and signings and everything before I make hard and fast predictions about who's making the playoffs and who's not. They could be in the mix, but at this point, I'm not sure that they've gotten better over last year. So it's hard to say that they're clearly a playoff.
I want to say that nothing that I say in these predictions is hard and fast. So
so I'll just say from simple math right now, they were 11th last year and top 10 made the playoffs in the East. If you're going somewhere like that, it feels like Montreal might fall out of the playoffs after the offseason they've had, but Atlanta and DC behind them are going to improve. So I kind of have them in the same spot, which I don't think is negative, because the one thing we kind of brushed over, we talked about Alaceda as 22 under 22. This team has signed so many young players, a lot of them from South America, who are high level prospects from U20 World Cup teams from Ecuador, Colombia, Venezuela. And so I think this year it's just, can you have maintained competitive? Can you be competitive over the course of the season and continue to build that ramp and runway? Because you mentioned, you know, they have a center forward they signed whose contract doesn't even kick in till next year at 17. So this is a club that has an idea of how they're going to improve long term. And so I don't think they need to make giant steps short term. They just have to continue to compete.
Kalen, I need you to pick them as a non-playoff team so that I can crow without any opposition no. when they're in.
I'm not going to do that, and not just because I love the Fire and, you know, I want to see them back in the playoffs, but just I when I watched their games last year, I didn't think that they had a huge like dearth of talent, or that they didn't have enough going forward, or they didn't have enough even defensively. It was really the mistakes that kept making me think that this team just either lacked discipline or just had moments of lack of confidence or whatever it is. So I think just with the roster, even though they haven't made a ton of wholesale changes to it, I just think it has to progress forward under a new season with Wiki. So I think they're in the playoffs this year. But I don't know. It's hard to say right now.
Well, I'm glad to have you with me. It's us against the world, baby. Here we go. New York Red Bulls, 2021, Gerhard Struber's first full season. I don't count that playoff game as much of anything, to be honest with you. Here is your haiku. Young legs can run, press, but this isn't Jesse's team. No stars. Will it work? Young, very young. All their signings. If you look at all the transfers in, the Andres Reyes, Tom Edwards, Andrew Gutman, Fabio, that's just this window. Go to all of Thelwell's windows. He is going U23, basically, with the guy he's signing, and they're not exactly proven guys. So this is going to be a case of system, of culture, of getting more than maybe the what like the depth chart would suggest because of the way you play and how much the guys are bought in. And it seems like Struber is that sort of coach. We're going to try to get him on the show. We might have him later this week, maybe next week. But he's one of those guys that we haven't got a chance to talk to yet that I really want to pick his brain. Dave, I know you're always tuned in with the Red Bulls. Was I off? Was I on there? Where did I stand on my haiku and quick analysis?
I think that they're trying to go back to what they were, as you said, which is high pressing, a system team, a team that's able to identify talent that other people don't want or can't use because they're very specific about the way they play and allow that to generate opportunities and for that to kind of build their ethos and who they are. They moved away from that over the course of the last few years, and now they're trying to steer right back into it. And I think it makes sense, one, to go young because they are sort of refilling their ranks behind the first team because they've lacked leadership at the academy level over the last few years. And the other is, you look at a lot of these guys, they're loans. So in a year, as I talked about with Atlanta, where you can't really go and meet players and figure out who they are exactly, these are a few flyers that you can take to see either what attributes Gerhard Struber needs going forward, or if these specific players are the ones that can make it work for them. And I think you look at last year, they signed a young DP in Drew Yearwood out of the English second division. He's supposed to fit into this system. That's supposed to be your star, and guys like him that can fit into this team. They've rolled a couple of dices at center back, especially Andres Reyes, who they like a lot and fits into what they want to do and they think can be better than what Miami used them for. And then a lot of young pieces in the attack where I think it's going to be whoever performs is the one that gets the opportunities.
Star spotlight, I mentioned it. This is a team that at one time had Thierry Henry, Tim Cahill, and BWP all playing for them. Now that was like early days BWP, but you even go to Sasha Kljestan.
Those teams weren't that good. They won a supporter shield with Henri at the end, but the Cahill teams were not great teams. Like this,
they won a supporter shield in 2013, and then 2014 they made it to what, the Eastern Conference Final. They lost. I mean,
I don't think Cahill was on the team anymore.
He was benched at that point.
Yeah,
Pecky had taken him out of the lineup. But like those last two teams were pretty good, but they've gone in completely the other direction since then. And it actually surprises me with this, because when Gerhard Struber took this job, he left Barnsley, right? It was Barnsley? It was one of the B teams in the championship.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so what? You could just take your pick. It's all of them.
Just take your pick. It's all Bs. Like he was kind of, you know, upset about a lack of resources, and he cited that. And now he's moved to the Red Bulls, and I assumed that part of it was going to be sort of opening up the checkbooks for, you know, relatively high-end DPs, not necessarily going out and spending $20 million or anything like that, but, you know, guys in the $5 to $8 million range who really make a difference in MLS, and we haven't seen any of that. And that really, really surprises me. So it feels like the Red Bulls are going back to the same well they went to last year when they had, you know, a team full of pretty talented guys who tried really hard. And once they got a little bit of tactical clarity, the results were pretty good. But at no point was it a team that had the requisite talent to go out and win a trophy.
I can't imagine that he came here with the idea that they were going to go sign the Thierry Henrys or Tim Cahill. Like, he had to know what the deal was at this point. And more than anything, I think maybe just to get back into the Red Bull system and to go back to a philosophy that he's been involved in, understands, and developing young players. We'll get to that. They've got some talented ones coming up through the pipeline, and their sort of definition of success has sort of shifted a little bit towards really sort of fitting into a global sphere, challenging, being competitive, and trying to make a run at some trophies if you can. But I don't think the expectations are as high as they once were there to say that this is a team that should be challenging for Supporter Shield as they did in the past, or really making a run at MLS Cup. And it's not to say that they, you know, couldn't get in the playoffs and make a run with no pressure.
That's damning. That feels that way for a team that won 3 Supporter Shields in 6 seasons from 2013 to 2018, and they were a threat to go out and win a trophy, you know, every single year. It's damning that they're at this point where we're doing the season preview and we like, can you imagine it? Is there something in your head that says, yeah, this can click and the Red Bulls can walk away with the trophy this year?
Not really, but it also doesn't, the ceiling is the floor is very low for this team too.
Yep.
Like I feel like they've cut out the ceiling and the floor in some ways and really pushed forward to just being consistently a tough team to play against. That's going to give it you a hard game every single week. It's going to apply pressure in a unique way. Going to develop young players through the pipeline and compete. And I think I still think they're a playoff team with a chance at a run. But unless you see, even when they've gone out and made the bigger signings, they haven't quite worked out as well. So, and they've been able to be competitive while playing young players and moving them on to, other places. So I think the system works. It's just it might not be what maybe the fans want to hear right now.
So I think that I agree with everything you're saying. I just wonder, instead of the fix being, well, let's bring in 3 DPs and reset the team around that, it feels like this is the reset. And then over the course of this year or next offseason, then you identify, okay, where are the star players that we will bring into that? And I don't think the star players are Thierry Henry's style one, but it's Robert Berich or Gaston Jimenez. It's Reynoso. Whatever it is, it's, I guess Reynoso is legitimate big time signing, but the point is you can sign higher quality at big positions and it can be below what Thierry Henry is and above, you'd say, what Drew Yearwood is.
For sure
there's a space in between. Yeah. There, but I think when you have Thilwell still settling in and now a new coach, you don't do it now, and so it's, let's see what the group looks like over the course of the first half of the season, and then let's start to make those moves and bring those players in now that we've reset our culture into what it should be and what is expected to be. And not all of this is on New York Red Bulls. I think you look at a group that Ralf Rangnick leaves, and from what I've heard across the Red Bull global system, that there was a lack of direction outside of Leipzig over the last year and a half or so. And so I think a lot of the teams are feeling like they have to reset themselves.
Speaking of that connection, you'll have to go out and replace Caden Clark, assuming he's going to be a starter this year. And you would assume that based on his performances last year and the fact that it looks like he's gone to Leipzig at the end of this season. That's our 2,222 player to watch. It's pretty obvious in this case. We have the Jim Curtin burner, COTY, out here hitting us up, clearly a Red Bull fan. Is Caden Clark projected to take the reins of the 10 for Kaku with the Rebels gone? How will Caden Clark be used? Who has a strong opinion on that? Or how he should be used?
Yeah, it's a huge question because we don't know how this team is going to play in terms of their formation. Struber has used a 4-4-2 diamond. He's used a flat 4-4-2. He used a 3-5-2 at the end of his tenure with Barnsley, I believe. And then in the one game he coached last year, he played a 4-2-3-1 with Clark as a right winger. I think he's probably best as a number 10. I would like to see them maybe try the diamond and play him in the same role that Brendan Aaronson played for the Union last year. You're not in your head, David. You saw him a lot in USL, and that's where he played in USL, right?
Yeah, and it's not a number 10 like Reynoso, right? It's a different position. You are kind of the point of the press in a lot of ways. You're the first option when the ball turns over. You're making a ton of aggressive runs into the box. That's what he does best, I think, is his activity and his ability on his first touch to make things clean, to turn it into an attack. So I expect him to play, whether it's behind two forwards or if it's maybe some dual eight style where you've got two guys that can get in and press if it's a 4-2-2-2, whatever that is. I think that's what he'll play as well. And I think that's what fits his skill set best.
What is the bottom fallout scenario? The fire surrounding the dog drinking coffee.
None of these guys are any good. Start the year bad. I expect a jump for Christian Casares. I expect a jump for Drew Yearwood. You need one of the young center backs to take a jump because Amro Tarek is not a starter week in and week out. If none of that happens, this could be a very bad team. So that's what the fire is.
Okay, there's the fire. How about the predictions? You said playoff team, Kalen. Feel confident about that?
Yeah, I think they're going to see some progression from some of the young players. Like I like Caceres as well. I really like Caden Clark. I think he can be become a star. Every time the game got bigger, he seemed to get better. And he's a pretty fearless player. So I really like him to advance. I'm excited to see him this season in a more regular, you know, season. And I think this team is squarely a playoff team. And I've heard really good things about Struber. So I'm excited to see what type of style he wants to play and, you know, how he implements that Red Bull system.
I think in the hunt for a playoff spot, and if they get in, they won't be hosting, you know, at the bottom tier of that playoff picture.
They're kind of in the same place for me as the Fire are, maybe a little bit more. I don't know, same place, honestly. But the hard part here is we keep saying playoff team, but come on, we don't even know how many teams are going to be in the playoffs right now. That's not even, we don't know. So it's hard. So take all that with a grain of salt. Dave, you got to the playoffs?
I think firmly a playoff team. I don't know how to word this, so I'm just going to say it. There are enough people who shoot themselves in the foot in this league that if you have an idea of who you are and how you want to play, and you do it intelligently week in and week out, you'll win games in an MLS regular season. I think the Red Bulls will be in the postseason. And I think at the end, we'll be talking about other people outside of the Red Bulls below them, where you're like, what the hell did they do with all the talent they had on their team?
You know what? I thought you said that extremely well.
Yeah, I like that.
You said you didn't know how to
I was going to call someone an idiot and I didn't. So.
Well, there we go. All right. LA Galaxy time. That transition wasn't, you know, that's not intentional, Galaxy fans. Nobody's not making that. That's not like a connection that you should make. It's just that we have to move on because we've hit the time limit here. All right. Let's get to it. LA Galaxy and Haiku. Forget Instagram. Big clubs demand big results. The work begins, Greg. And I say Greg and I don't say Chicharito. One, because Chicharito is a lot of syllables. But two, because I don't think this is on really Chicharito. Like, he has got to perform, yes, 100%. He's getting paid to do it. He's got the reputation. They need it from him. But the work for the Galaxy is much, much bigger than that. It is the foundation of everything that they're doing. It is the plan. It is the way the culture is being developed. It is the day-to-day. It is the in-game stuff. It's literally everything. Like, this is a club to me in hiring Greg Vanney that they said, come in and remake us into what we should be because we are not that right now. So none of the, like, you know, none of the spackle, can't paint over the issues. You don't have Zlatan to do that. It's got to be truly like a transformation for the LA Galaxy this year. They've made a lot of signings, maybe not some of the ones that we've expected so far, which we'll get to. Greg Vanney is the biggest of those signings. You have Jonathan Bond coming in at goalkeeper looking for games. Jorge Villafaña, we know him well. Sueño, he's going to be a starter. Derek Williams, probably going to be a starter at center back, you would think, coming over from the championship. Victor Vasquez in. We haven't really talked about that. Maybe this is a good time. Samuel Grandsire is coming in from France. Looks like Kevin Cabral maybe could come in as well from France. He's a 21-year-old left winger in League Two right now. I think like 7 goals, 5 assists this year for Valenciennes. A couple $1 million is what it's being reported at. The one we don't have here is Christian Pavone. If you've been following the news around Christian Pavone, which I'm sure we all have, he is on trial now, and correct me if I'm wrong about any of these details, guys, for rape. So it's very, very serious. It's looking, you know, they have expressed as a player that they would like to have him back, but that is a situation that's far bigger than soccer and much more important than anything we'll talk about in this LA Galaxy side. It is I will call it an opinion right now, that it's probably time to move on from Christian Pavone as an LA Galaxy player. Certainly because of the personal issues that are happening right now and the legal process is ongoing. So I don't want to make any sort of grand statements about what that legal process means other than we all understand the seriousness of it. But from a strictly soccer sense, wipe the rest of that out. He had surgery on 2 ankles and he is at least a $10 million player. It seems he is a best 11 talent in this league. But it's probably time. We shall see what happens with the Galaxy on that front. And that's why you're seeing guys like Kevin Cabral linked as well, because you got to move on at some point. How about Victor Vasquez, though? What do we make of this signing? I don't think we talked about it. Or did we mention it on Thursday? I mean, obviously, he and Greg are boys from from those glory years in Toronto. Is this the right sort of move for the LA Galaxy?
I think this is a low end, a culture move to bring into the locker room. This is not, if Victor Vasquez starts 10 games this year, I think the LA Galaxy are in trouble.
10 games?
Yeah. I think just try to get 1,000 minutes from him as a sub. He can still pass the ball in games where you're throwing the kitchen sink in at the end to try to, you know, get a result. It makes a lot of sense to bring him on because he's still absolute magic. But his legs are gone. He can't, you know, even in 2017 when he was so great, he couldn't move that well. And we're 4 years later on, and, you know, he's not aging backwards. But it's as a culture move and as a potential like super sub problem solver, like hopefully in the best case scenario, he is the number 10 version of Elsinho, where he comes in and he plays 20 minutes and he just changes the game. And that's all you're going to ask of him.
So I think he's also going to have a huge impact in the preseason and understanding what Vanny wants, because as a manager, when you come in and you impart your ideas and you're trying to, you know, convince the team and to get some understanding, it's one thing to say it, and it's another person to sort of have somebody out there who understands it, who can help you implement it. And of course, Vasquez is going to have the respect and trust of the locker room. So when he's out there and is sort of a little bit of a coach on the field to help bring some of these ideas to life, I think that's going to be a thing. And then also coming in late and in big moments. I mean, I think this Galaxy team is still a team with real ambition, although they're going to have to do a big reset. They've got a pretty big, they've still got some big stars on their team, of course. And so I think Vanny, if I'm sure he's has his eye on the playoffs as a, and so if you're going to be a playoff team, having a guy with playoff experience like Victor Vasquez, a championship at that would be
so. So I think the way I see it is you come into this offseason, it was a mess of a backline for the Galaxy. How do you get more to Chicharito? They have made the moves to clean up their backline. Whether it works or not, we can debate, but they went out and signed an in-their-prime center back. They get Viafania. They upgrade at goalkeeper. So they've made those moves. Obviously, everything going on with Pavone throws things in the air a little bit in the attack. But to me, one of the biggest things with this group is we didn't have Jonah Dos Santos on our top five at defensive midfielder or number eight, because I don't know which one he is, because there's no one else in this midfield. It's him and Sebastian Legette, and that's it. And I think that's the biggest question mark still with this Galaxy team to me is, where does Jonah play? Because who does he play with? And this was a team that was basically bypassing midfield all of last year.
Doesn't it make more sense, given Jonah's age and range of passing and ability to receive the ball under pressure, like play him in the Jackson Ewell national team role as like a field orchestrating number six, push Legette up into the eight role, and then find another eight for the other side and play without a true 10, but like actually institute that system and put, like, cause you don't want to have Jonah covering the same amount of ground that he had to cover in 2019. Like, he was insane in 2019,
which is what he's been as a great player in his career too.
Right. But you have to start, like, he's 31, man. You have to start accepting the fact that he's aging and saving his legs a little bit. He can still pass the hell out of the ball and move the game around. Like, start leveraging that instead of asking him to be Diego Chara, because he's just like, only Diego Chara can be Diego Chara up into his mid 30s, it seems.
So then to me, that's where the Galaxy need to use that DP spot. You can generate opportunities off the wing. You can generate opportunities through your system. I think you can make signings like a Grandseer to give you production under the radar better at the wing position than in central midfield. That's where the Galaxy need a star-like player to bring them that quality so that they can control games. And I don't know if it happens in this window because of the way things have gone or if it happens in the summer, but I think that's the big move the Galaxy needs to make.
In some ways, the way that this season is set up is really nice for the Galaxy, and that it's sort of that backlit. We talked about it over and over, that there won't be that many games before the summer window opens back up. So maybe that's a good thing for the Galaxy. They won't be too far behind if it's no good. And we will get to Chicharito in a second, but God, we've talked about him so much. I think you understand what's going on with him and what they're going to try to do. They're going to try to put him in the positions that he can be the most successful in. Let's do 2222 player to watch. We had an argument. Julian Araujo, he's 19 years old. He's a starting right back. He's very, very good. Efra Alvarez.
Is he starting right back? Are we 100% sure?
I mean, come on. Greg comes into, like, they wouldn't sign O'Neal Fisher. Yeah, they wouldn't sign O'Neal Fisher. Right, but back? Like, the whole point of this transition is that you're going to get more out of your city, out of your academy, out of this thing that we lauded them forever for. And to have Julian push his way into the team and look so good and have some moments that were 18, 19 year old moments, but then yank him back out, to me, that would just be antithesis to what this team should be trying to be. And then I look at Efra Alvarez, and I think he's 18 years old. He's in the full Mexico national team right now. Greg Berhalter says, hey, go do it. Go check it out. We want you. We think you're really special. He's just 18. And it makes me feel like all that talk about his fitness and everything else and his professionalism was just stupid. You know, and I was a part of that for sure, but was probably stupid because he's only 18 years old and his talent, you know, it's not in a thimble. It's in a bucket. So how can Greg Vanney have that bucket overflow for Efra Alvarez? Like, paint me a picture, guys, of how you sort of like turbocharge this Efra Alvarez, you know, career and everything else, and get what Zlatan says is there, and get what clearly Tata says is there, and Greg Berhalter says is there. How does this work? Because we said it, they don't have much of a midfield here. They do have questions on the wing. So what is it? Where would he be? How does it go down?
I'm of the opinion that Efra's best chance of being a significant professional player would be in the Babello role. Would be like, just, he's our number 10. Get the ball to him and let him make magic. But a player like that, you have to protect him with the other players in midfield, and you have to give him specific types of winger and forward, which Chicharito is, by the way. Chicharito would feast with a real number 10. But beyond that, you have to be kind of insane to commit to that with an 18-year-old who's never been a 90-minute player for any team at any level. Even when he was playing with the Mexican youth national teams, he's not a 90-minute player for them because of those fitness issues. And you want to throw it out because he's 18 years old. I get that. He's also a professional soccer player who's fighting for a job. I don't think you could play him as a winger. I don't think you can play him regularly as a winger. Now, maybe I'm wrong. Hopefully I'm wrong. But he hasn't shown that yet.
I disagree with that, Dora. I'm just saying, in terms of what Weeby was saying, because this is one of the things that we're still figuring out, is if you're a kid that lives at home, you haven't hit your growth spurt yet, you've not worked as a professional in weight training and in terms of nutrition throughout your life. I mean, I'm sure Kalen knows better than us. It's different at this level. And we are still dealing at many times with kids who live at home and don't operate as professionals. Now, he's had 2 years, a year and a half or so of this. You'd hope that it would have already happened. But that's on the Galaxy, and that's their job now.
Yeah, I agree with that, but he's had 3 years in the system.
But when did you hit your growth spurt, right? Like, straight up, this is what people say with him. It's baby fat. And so maybe he never grows out of that. Maybe that never changes. But I think we have to calculate for the fact that every person is different, and it's at an age where you can't have expectations that something's going to happen automatically like you can with a 27-year-old pro.
I'm less concerned with his like body makeup and like percentage body fat and all those types of things, because I've played with some players that are, you know, Cuauhtemoc Blanco, like, or a lot of guys that are like, I got to get one a show, did not necessarily fit the sort of standards of way we think of, you know, Ronaldo-esque, you know, chiseled abs and all that. And I don't think that really matters as long as you put in the work. And I actually think that it is important to see, okay, how do we create the best environment for him? And I agree with Doyle that I think a number 10 position is going to suit him a lot better than being on the wing. And also the challenges of saying, do we want to just really give the keys to this kid at this point and really adjust our system to be able to create for this? Or is it better to bring him off the bench as a change of pace, really get him on the field when the game opens up a little bit, and seeing how that goes? So I also, as much as I love the player kids movement and all that, and there is added responsibility on these teams to get the best out of the players, I still think that it's on the player as well to get the best out of themselves and to get their career moving forward. So if he really has aspirations to not just sort of flirt with the U.S. men's national team and flirt with Mexico, but to actually get called in and get minutes and play and really, you know, commit to a long, successful career, he's also got a responsibility in that as well. And that comes with being a 90-minute player, or maybe hearing, you know, the talking heads talking about him and saying, you know what, I can do this and I belong out here. I think he's the type of player that fit that actually plays better around better players and better in a better system. So I think there is promise with how much change has happened with the Galaxy over the past couple of years and how much inertia Zlatan had, and they had a great relationship. But I think, and that kind of speaks to that actually, is just that Zlatan was able to see what a talented player around maybe other players are. So I think there is promise in the fact that Vanny is going to come in and right the ship, but I think less so than to get the best out of Efra than to create an environment where Efra might be able to find more success.
Oh, I think that's,
I just want to say this, well, this segment should have been about, it should have been about Araujo, because Araujo is the actual 2,222 star.
Anyway. We've talked a lot about Araujo, but guess what? You know what? We said, hey, Minnesota United, you took that shine from the LA Galaxy. Guess who we're not going to talk about because of that? Chicharito. We've already done it. You know what's at stake for this guy. You follow him on Instagram. You've heard us have these conversations over and over and over. Got to score goals. Got to live up to your money. It's time, Cheech. This is the deal.
I've got my top five list.
Yeah, we got that.
Too,
perfect.
Soon.
Yeah. Is he, yeah. We'll see if he's there.
He's not on it.
The fire surrounding the Galaxy, this is fine. I don't even think we need to do that because you've emerged from the fire. The last couple of years have been the fire, and now you're just trying to like douse yourself in water and hope it doesn't come back. Let's do the quick prediction so we can get to Kalen's top five number nines. I'm going to say not a playoff team.
I'll say in the fight.
I'll go with Doyle as well.
I have no idea. I don't like picking against Greg Vanney from making the playoffs. It's really what's holding me back, but I've just seen so much change around the Galaxy and so much dysfunction that I wonder how does it all fit together. And you know, I think the roster is still taking shape as well, too. So
If it's eight teams, maybe.
How sure are you that Greg Vanney is the guy to fix this?
He would be, if I had to bet everything on one person in MLS right now to come to LA, he would be the obvious choice. So I really do think he can change a culture. I like his staff. I know his staff a little bit too. I like his staff. I think he's kind of exactly what they needed to really sort of reset things. I don't know if it will be as quick as maybe everybody would.
Yeah.
Like. That, by the way, to me is the fire meme is if they let go of Dennis DeCloso or Greg Vanney based on any performance this year. I think you need to understand whatever it is, it's not for 2021. Yep. And to give them an opportunity to work through the kinks, because even if it goes up early in the year and they have a few good performances, it's going to come back down if this is the roster, because this is not a good enough group. And that's fine, because the league has changed and the Galaxy can't just fix it with one signing anymore.
I agree with all that. Best case scenario for the Galaxy is that they sneak into the playoffs, or that they're right there and almost get it done, but it feels like, we're a team, we know where we're going, and Efra starts to, and Araujo starts to, or continues to, really develop. So there's signs of like, hey, we'll play young players, and those young players will thrive alongside our stars. All right, we have some time here. 9 minutes left in the show to do the number nines. Kalen Carr's top five number nines in Major League Soccer. Take it away, Kalen.
Wow. Thank you for that, Weeby. That was beautiful. So first of all, I don't want to put a damper on this list at all, but I would say that overall, I feel like number nines, we've sort of debated it even on this show, whether Minnesota needs a number nine or they don't need a number nine, or even when we start with the U23s, like what type of number nine are we going to play with the U.S. men's national team? And I think when you look globally, a lot of the best players are maybe not number nines, or you look at the way that teams are playing with wingers being the most dangerous. But there are some notable exceptions, and I'm going to run you through my list right now. Top five number nines in MLS. And yes, at the top, you got to go with Joseph Martinez. That's right. Obvious choice. He is just a killer. I think, you know, coming back from an ACL is difficult. It's something that a lot of players have been through, myself included. I think, you know, you start to feel like it's going to come back slowly. You're going to be a little hesitant at first. You have that trust, that rhythm. Throw that out the window. Joseph is not that type of player. That's not how he plays. And I actually think this first game against Orlando is super interesting because from a mentality perspective, he's going to be so dialed in for that match. And I think it can help him sort of get off to the right track on a season and really push forward. So I think very clearly, I think we'll see him go back to being the best number nine in the league, and really the best number nine we've ever seen in this league. There you go.
All right.
Number two, I've got Rui Diaz. I think he had 12 goals last year. in 17 matches. Strange year, of course, but he's had double-digit goals, I think, in every season since he's come to MLS. His postseason record is sort of, you know, in another planet, pretty insane when you look at his numbers. And then, you know, he can do it in behind. He can do it on the soft spot, on top of the box. He can do it with both feet, with his head. And similar to Joseph, he has that sort of relentless mentality. He's just lethal. I know no Jordan Morris, but I think more of the load will fall on Rui Diaz, and I think he'll be ready to handle that. Third on my list, Jossy Zardes. Look, you know, American makes the top three of the list. I think that's a positive. Consistency, playing for the best team in MLS. I think some people, the knock might say, okay, BWP, does he come in and maybe steal a couple goals here and there? I actually think BWP will make Jossy a better player in a lot of ways. I think having someone to push him from behind is always good for a number nine, as well as picking up some of the little trade craft and you know, ways of the veteran who's one of the best to ever do it as a number nine in MLS. So I got Zardes as my number three. Should we pause or should I keep rolling?
No, I like it.
We have the exact same top three, Kalen.
Keep going.
Good job.
Actually,
I had one difference in the top three, but keep going.
Okay.
No. Now we have a difference. So now I'm interested.
Yeah, Doyle, debate it.
I wouldn't have had Jossy third. I have Barrich over Jossy. So I think Barrich is just a little bit more multidimensional in terms of his link-up play and ability to bring his team upfield by being an outlet. Whereas Jossy, he's much better at that than people give him credit for, but it's like he's not close to Barrich.
But the thing Jossy has, which may be unfair to Barrich because he hasn't been in this league, is reliability and minutes, right? You know, Jossy's going to start all of every year. He's going to score goals. Like there's a guarantee with him, and especially because of what he needs to do for his team, which is different than Barrich, which I think for me, coming into this season, keeps Jossy ahead of Barrich by a little bit.
That's fair.
All right.
I like it.
I'm just
number four.
I'm just jotting down names, and I'm wondering if you're going to not include just to prepare myself. So I'm very interested in these final two because there's a lot of names floating around. Give it to me. Number four.
This one might be a little bit of a surprise. I wasn't sure because we didn't talk about this beforehand, but I'm going with Pulido as number four for me. He had just 6 goals, I think, last year in 11 starts. But it was a very stop-start season for him, like everybody and year. But, you know, injuries and absences and all that. But the quality is there. And the other thing that really sort of knocked him up on my list was he did have 5 assists as well. And so I think he showed a much more well-rounded game than we or I even expected or knew about before he came into Major League Soccer, where he's not just a you know, guy in the box, a fox in the box is going to get in there, score with his head. He really can, you know, dummy the ball. He can spin and turn. He can facilitate. He can find the wingers. And I think we only saw a little bit of him. So I wouldn't be shocked to see him in the top three for Golden Boot if he has a healthy, productive season. So Pulido, I think, maybe based on high ceiling, I put number four. And then 5, to appease Matthew Doyle, Barrich, and just, you know, also from my own list, of course, he had 12 goals last year. I think he had over a third of the goals for the Fire, which is maybe more of the percentage than maybe the Fire would want. They need to find some other outlets that can get goals for them and contribute, because too much fell on Barrich's shoulders, but he does have that quality. I also like his game where he can kind of stretch the field and get him behind a little bit. He makes good runs, times his runs well. He's sort of like, he's pretty smooth on the ball. He can kind of turn you around. He's got a quick trigger, and I like Barrich a lot. And I think if the Fire can actually sort of solidify things around him, we actually may see a little bit more out of him. So those are my top 5.
Yes.
I like the list.
Let's go, you know, Kalen.
I like the list.
It's a tough one.
It is.
We had the exact same list man for man. So Kalen's my hero and I'm done.
Wow.
Does Pulido's lack of box danger bother anybody? Because that was the knock on him with Chivas. It was something he wasn't great at last year for Kansas City. And granted, it was a start season. He's phenomenal dropping off and linking play and setting things up. But like, he has never been, and you even kind of said it in your analysis, Kalen, you know, he's not just a fox in the box. Like, he's not at all a fox in the box. He doesn't score those Chris Wondolowski goals.
Yeah, he more falls under the, I think he enjoys dropping back deep more, as we were talking about how a false nine would play, even though he looks the part of a number nine. He does like to drop off a little bit more and facilitate. But there were some goals in the box last year that I saw where I think he can do it. And if you got Peter Vermees yelling at you from the sideline as well, get in there. I think there's still a lot more to see from him. That's why I was kind of like scared and excited for this season for him, because I think there's a lot more for him to give.
I agree. I think he could be best 11. Now, that'd be hard given this list, but can be and will be are very, very different. Some names that were not here that I just want to throw out because people are probably thinking him, and it's obvious. Gonzalo Higuain has not done it in MLS yet, unless you're counting posts as goals, which we're not. He's not done it. So he could do it. He could do it and push his way into this list. Lucas Cavallini is not in this list, but I think he'll have a big bounce up. I wouldn't have put him in the list. And Josie Altidore is, for me, the biggest sort of question mark among center forwards in MLS this year. Like, if he is healthy and really about it, he certainly can and should be probably top three because his performances will back it up, but we haven't seen that for a little while now, certainly not with any sort of consistency.
I thought this was an FC Cincinnati podcast.
Yeah, right.
Mention Brenner.
Brenner, yeah. Yeah, he was kind of the unknown sleeper pick to get in there, but there's just too much quality there. And I think you're starting to see a little bit getting to nines and how teams are investing or not investing in nines, where you're seeing kind of these dual roles where it's Shabilko and Santos kind of trading off. Or you're seeing even the way LAFC used Musaski and BWP, just finding a little more value at the nine position and then spending more money on the wings. Even I think I had like Gustavo Bo, who's like not really a nine, or Buxa is not really a nine, but kind of play that way at times. But having more of a stable of number nines, I'm seeing more teams go for. But because I'm not sure if that number nine thing, maybe outside of Zardes, if any of those teams may be in for the supporter shield. So
I would say the two names that didn't get mentioned, Chicharito, obviously, and what he can do. And then Eber, if he's healthy, we know what he's been for NYCFC. Kalen mentions it's a different style with him, but when he's healthy and when he's on, he changes that team and he's in that conversation for most effective at that position, similar to what Pulido does.
All right, we can't get to the mailbag on the show. Luckily for us, we're going to do it on Spaces. You, if you're listening now, are going to be grandly disappointed. I hope you have gotten on Twitter in the middle of the day and joined in with us. We're going to try to do it every show. We'll see if that sticks. Thanks to you guys. It's been a fun show. Really enjoyed it. Our season previews roll on as the week goes on. So hit us up, 401-206-0MLS, extratime@mlssoccer.com.
And we're going to close out on this from T.O. Lewis, a diehard Fire fan, says he listens every Monday and Thursday that he can. To Andrew, I know you said you were going to down a bottle of Malort if my Fire made the playoffs this season. If they do, I will gladly supply the booze. P.S. I'm glad Kalen Carr is back. Thank you, Theo.
What do you think is in this coffee cup? Hey, we'll see you on Thursday.